CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Irene Dell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Today, I'm honored to welcome UBC's 13th president, Professor Arvind Gupta, to the show. Greetings.
Hello, Ira. Nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. So I want to begin with reactions. Now that you've actually had 6 months or so as the president of UBC, what have been some of your reactions and surprises that you've encountered?
Well, let me talk about two. One is how passionate everyone at UBC is about what they do. I just keep running into people all across campus who say, let me tell you what I do. Let me tell you how great it is. And I just love hearing about everything going on campus. And I've been joking that we need to create a course called UBC 101. Because when you're a faculty member, you see maybe 5% of this university. And I think the other 95% is just fascinating. The other thing that has been a real eye-opener for me is how many people in the community approach me and ask what they can do for UBC. And I hadn't realized the depth of support we have in Vancouver and in Kelowna and the Okanagan for UBC. And it, in many ways, is very heartening for me that so many people want us to succeed.
Have you found this exhausting or exhilarating?
Well, so far it's been absolutely exhilarating. You know, it's one of those jobs where you can do everything that comes at you. There just wouldn't be enough time in the day. But I just love every morning getting up and meeting all new set of people, learning all new things. So it's been fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Well, now, what about your background? I mean, you haven't actually prepared to become a university president, I don't think. And I know your background has principally been in high tech. Do you see that as a significant step in terms of moving into the executive position?
Well, it's true that there's lots of newness to this job. I've had to learn about the administrative structures at UBC. But at the same time, I've been a big advocate that we need to think carefully about our students, what we're doing with the students, the types of programs we're creating for our students, and then also measuring, are they having lifetimes of successes? What are they doing with their lives after they leave the university? Are they 5 years, 10 years, 15 years later saying that what they got from UBC is what's going to give them to be successful human beings? And I think that that kind of philosophy I can see really helps when you're in the presidential role. You really have to think long term about what our students are doing, what our faculty are doing, how do we position ourselves in society? Because I see the university as part of society. It's not separated off. And so as part of society, we have to think about how society is changing, how it will change, and how we're positioned within that.
So you think the university is fairly quick in responding to changes in society?
Well, let me put it this way. I think that we're quicker than I realized, but we're not quick enough. And I, now that I'm in this role, I can see the society actually changes very rapidly. I'm paying much more attention to government policy, and I see how fast it evolves. And in some ways, it's good that we don't change quite as fast because we have history and we're respectful of that history. At the same time, I think it's clear to all of us that the society today is different than that 10 years ago and definitely different than 30 years ago. And we have to stay up with it. So maybe I can give you one example. Last year, we had something very interesting happen in Canada. For the first time, more than 50% of working Canadians, 25 to 65-year-olds, have a post-secondary credential. Now, just think back 50 years ago. You and I probably both remember a time when people signed X on their income tax form. 100 years ago, 30 to 50% of our society was illiterate. What a change. How do we relate to a society that's so highly educated? It's never happened in the history of universities that everyone around is educated.
Well, that does raise all kinds of challenges and questions. Do you anticipate, do you look forward to some adjustments in terms of how we, I hate to use the word, deliver the content of our various courses, whether it's philosophy or electrical engineering?
Well, I think that that's going to change. I think that that the very paradigms that we're putting in the classroom will change for a number of reasons. One is that our young people today have this fluidity with knowledge. they're brought up having knowledge at their fingertips. In my day, I really was hungering for someone to give me knowledge. So now we're in the process of understanding how we use knowledge as opposed to communicating knowledge. That's already a very big change. The second is, in a society that's highly educated, they can be our partner in delivering education to our students. They can be our partner in getting us to have our students think about the knowledge that they're obtaining. That we couldn't do 30 years ago. So I think it's not only should it change, but it will change. And I think we should be leaders in thinking about that change.
Now, what about the Faculty of Arts? I mean, we are here partly for UBC Arts on Air. Can you give a quick sort of insight, perception, or sense of the Faculty of Arts tomorrow and 5 and 15 years from now? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, very good question. Well, let me say a couple of things about arts. I'm not from the arts, so this has been a real big education for me, all the great things going on in the Faculty of Arts. I worry a little bit at times that there's so much rhetoric about STEM that we ourselves get caught up in that rhetoric and we aren't able to explain the broader things going on across campus. We're not able to explain the role of all the different disciplines in society. So I think that's something that we have to work on. But arts in particular, what I'm realizing is that the way we relate to each other as human beings, understanding that is really what happens in the arts, whether it's through philosophy or through languages, it's really this way that we both document and what's happened in the past and what will happen in the future. And I think it's clear the way that human beings are relating to each other is changing dramatically. Who would have thought that children today do not pick up the phone and call each other? None of us could have predicted that my children don't care how many minutes of talk time they have on their cell phone. They want to make sure they have unlimited text messaging and unlimited data. And so the way that human beings are relating to each other is changing in a very fundamental way. You know, I was just talking to someone who started a virtual company, and he has employees in different parts of the world working together. I couldn't even imagine how this company is operating. But if we're going to understand how human beings are going to relate to each other going forward, we have to think about the way that the arts speak to us. We have to think about historically how human beings, what was the essence of this communication they had and the relationships they had, because it obviously wasn't what I thought it was, which was picking up the phone and talking. So people are able to build relationships and communicate and process and actually get things done without what I would have thought were the normal mediums. So who's going to study these things except in the arts?
Well, it's interesting because the content may remain the same, but the form in which the content is being studied or expressed, that's where the change may happen, and that's where the arts may face a giant challenge.
Well, definitely the way that we're processing this information is changing very quickly, and I think we should be looking to the arts to help us understand what's going on. And I think this is a very exciting period then for the arts, because technology in and of itself doesn't speak to the human condition. It's what we do with the technology that matters. And I wonder if sometimes we get too caught up in the technology for the sake of technology than what we're doing with it. So I think it's a great opportunity for the arts. It's a great opportunity to marry the arts with the technological revolution. So I think there's a very bright future for the arts if we see it in the right way.
What does it mean to you as president to oversee UBC's centenary, and how do you look at the next 100 years of UBC?
Yeah, so just for your listeners, what's interesting about this year is that it's both the 100th anniversary of our first UBC class and our first graduating class. And I think that's very unique in a university because, I'm clear, we were McGill College, so we took some of the students in as McGill College, but in 1916, our first year, those students would have graduated as UBC students, and the first UBC students would have started. So I think that's already an amazing thing. But I'm really honored and very lucky to be the president when we celebrate the 100th anniversary of UBC. And, you know, as I listen to the stories about where UBC has come from. Whenever I meet groups of alumni, I say, this is our centenary year, and invariably the stories start coming up. And you think about all those great people who built this university. And in some ways, nothing has changed and everything has changed. The things they were passionate about are the things that we're passionate about. And I suspect 100 years from now, people will be passionate about those same things. Of course, they were living in a very different circumstance, very different government environment, very different society. But they were trying to think about what do our students need to succeed, whether it was athletic fields or new cultural programs or these emerging technology and new ideas in science. They were thinking, what do we need to give our students a chance to succeed? Already, interestingly, 50 years ago, the university was talking about, there's something happening in Asia. We should maybe think about more students coming from Asia. Something we don't think, we think this is a recent phenomenon, that we've had international students coming from Asia. 50 years ago, we were talking about that. 70 years ago, we were talking about the role of women in universities. And already, 70 years ago, we had about 40% of our student body were women, which, again, we think of as a recent phenomenon, this idea. And yet, this was a big discussion on this campus. So when I look back, I realize that human beings were actually pretty informed. Our own colleagues were pretty informed about the role of universities. And what does that say about the way we look at the future of UBC? So I'm hoping the centenary is a time for us to reflect back on what we've learned about UBC and then project that forward on where UBC should be going. I think there's a lot of value to studying our history to think about our future.
I think it is a very opportune moment in the history of the university, indeed, to look forward, not forgetting the past, but both taking assessment and also trying to imagine the next steps, no matter what the discipline or the program. And I assume you have that same ideal?
Well, one of the things we're asking in the centenary is for everyone to come up with ideas for activities that help us think about the future from their perspective. So we've had a huge amount of, huge number of ideas, huge outpouring of thought about this. And I think, Ira, you're on the committee that's looking at those ideas. And what I'm told is really fascinating things have come through. You know, people have really tried to project the future out. And, you know, maybe sometimes it's easier to think about 100 years from now than next year. It's very hard to know what's going to happen next year. But sometimes when you really start thinking longer term, you can see where things have to go. And again, when you think back to what they were thinking about 70 years ago, they knew one day we'd be a very international university. So in the same way today, when we think about 7 years hence, we can think about what the university might have to look like. And then, you know, you can have some interesting discussions. So I'm hoping the centenary is a time when we can all come together, think about the university, think about where we want to go, think about how we can do this collaboratively. It's a big place. So how can we bring the various parts of the university together to get to the next level?
So switching gears very briefly, what are you reading at the moment, but for pleasure?
Well, I have to tell you that in the last 6 months, I've had almost no time to
read. I should have rephrased that. Do you have any time to read for pleasure?
So I'm hoping this summer I'll be going back to reading for pleasure.
And what do you like to read for pleasure?
Well, yeah, so, one thing is that my wife and I like to read fiction, and so we do try to find the latest interesting fiction, but I'm also one of these people who likes to read pop psychology and pop economics and pop anthropology, so, guns, germs, and steel kind of books, I actually find I learn a lot by just reading about different disciplines, you know, put in a sort of a entertaining manner. And so, yeah, so I haven't actually made a reading list for this summer, but it's coming soon.
I see. I have a task then to try and supplement.
If you have good books, if you have good suggestions, happy to hear them.
So finally, I want to know, if you were beginning your university education all over again, would you have majored in the same discipline and fields? Or do you say, at this point, I really should have moved into chemistry or medicine or something?
Well, I went to university at a time when universities were narrowing their focus in some way. So I studied math and I took a few computer science classes, and they gave me a joint degree for that. But this idea of having minors that were far removed from what you were studying as your core wasn't really in vogue. So I think one of the great things we've done in universities is you can take an arts or science degree and then have a minor from some other discipline completely removed. So I'd probably study math with a minor in history. Those are the two fields I was considering when I went to university, but it was just impossible when I went to do both. But now we've worked very hard to allow students to pursue multiple passions. And so I think this is a great opportunity for our young people to actually explore much more things they're passionate about, and then, you know, get a major with one or two minors. And so I encourage all the students I meet to think about their career in that, their university career in that way.
I think that's absolutely true, and it's a sign of, again, the expansion and opportunities now that students have, which, again, even 20 years ago wasn't quite right there.
Yeah, so I think we've come a long way, and as we keep evolving this, actually, I was just talking to someone who said, you know, we should have mini minors. We should be able to take four or five mini minors of just a few classes each and then have a major that shows depth in an area. And I thought, what an interesting idea.
But it looks like it would be a giant degree when you finish, right? You need a big diploma.
A big certificate, that's right.
Well, many thanks, Arvind. I've been talking to Professor Arvind Gupta, President of the University of British Columbia. Thank you for joining us today on UBC Arts on Air. And stay tuned for future talks with the Faculty of Arts leading students, faculty, and administrators. Thanks again.
Thank you.